Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and we are here with an admirable editor, a pure raconteur of genre addictions, of the fandoms we love so much. The lead editor for ATB Publishing's Outside In line, Stace Smith, and she has a large number of books about our different genres, favorites, Doctor Who, X-Files, Star Trek Next Generation, Buffy, Angel, with more yet to come. So welcome, Stace.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
After, you know, full disclosure, I have written an essay for both volumes of the X-Files collections and an upcoming one for Babylon 5. Woo-hoo! So I wanted to find out more about how this series came about, how you got involved with finding the writers to fill these lines, and just how this whole thing came to be.
Yes. So this was the wildest, biggest, wackiest idea I ever had. I kind of think I was like, I know a lot of people, and I had this idea of, why don't I get a lot of people that I know to write a lot of essays? And the original idea was for a classic Doctor Who, and I thought, there's 160 classic stories. Why don't I try to get 160 people to write 160 essays? And I thought, this is ridiculous. There's no way this is going to work. And I called in all my favors of all my contacts, and I got to about 50, and I thought, I'm not even halfway. There's still more than 100 to go. I was like, I'll never pull this off. And at the same time, the publisher was building his publishing business, essentially. And I kind of thought, I bet he'll be like too naive to actually know that this is a terrible idea. And I was right, which he freely admits now. And so we created this series. And the idea is, it kind of looks at old, well, at least the original idea was, it looks at old sci-fi. Because I wanted to, you know, especially classic Doctor Who, I was like, everything's been said already. Like, you know, everyone has had their say about classic Doctor Who. So let's say something different. So I feel like, the wheeze is kind of like, we're going to do 160 people. But the engine, I think, that powers these books are, say it with a twist. Say something interesting, fascinating, or just outright gonzo. Just, you know, have fun with it. And people sort of pointed out, yeah, you're doing reviews with a twist. Like, that makes reviews creative. And people really get the creative juices flowing. And so I really love this. I mean, it has to be commentary, but that commentary can be heavily, heavily disguised. So, yeah, we started with Doctor Who. We moved to Star Trek. We've moved to Buffy and Angel. We just done the first two-volume series, which is on the X-Files. And, Summer, I'm amused that, you know, you're talking about you being in both the X-Files books. Amusingly, you didn't write about the X-Files either time because we added in a few other things. So, yes, it's not just – well, I mean, so previous ones were just the show itself, but we always threw in something else. Like, if it was Next Generation, we did there's a couple of crossover episodes. So we threw those in. If it was, we did the X-Files, we threw in Culture, because that was basically the progenitor of the X-Files. And then the second X-Files volume, it was X-Files sort of, old and new, like kind of the post-Mulder stuff, and also the revival. But we also put in Millennium and Harsh Realm, which you did one for, and Lone Gunman. Basically, kind of the whole Chris Carter universe, really, because we basically had the space.
Mm-hmm. And that was so what appealed to me most, that you were covering everything that Chris Carter had his fingers in. And I don't know if it's just bad luck or just bad choices, but I seem to fall in love with shows that end up having a painfully short run. And just because I wanted the Night Stalker reboot, the Kolchak reboot, to succeed so badly. And it didn't, and I was crushed by that. And you giving me a chance to actually write out what I thought that show could be and how the shows we never saw were leading us to that place, That was a little cathartic for me, so thank you.
Oh yeah. Well, you're very welcome. It was very, I mean, I was kind of a bit worried about the new cold check, because we, like, actually originally Arnold said, "Oh, don't throw in the new one, it's terrible." And I was like, "No, we've kind of got this completist view here. We're doing the old one, but let's do the new one too." And I recruited a bunch of people who'd never seen it, because it wasn't very popular and stuff. And then people just had a lot of fun with it. They're like, "Oh my God, this is absolutely terrible TV," which is perfect for making fun of things and, saying something with a twist. I feel like if you're going to throw in jokes, you're kind of there already. I'm always big on the jokes. I'm like, people say my notes to them are usually more jokes, more jokes. Put in more jokes, make this funny. And the beta reader who read the X-Files Kolchak volume, he's like, "I've never seen an episode of Kolchak." He's like, "But these essays make me really want to, both the old series and perversely the new one." He's like, these pieces are actually making me want to watch it, even as they're telling me how terrible it is." So I thought, well, there's no better validation than that.
Yeah, and I was a fan of the old Kolchak series, which is I think part of why I wanted the new Kolchak series to succeed. And it dawned on me about a week ago, there's another show that's sort of loosely connected to Chris Carter that wasn't in this collection, and it was Space Above and Beyond.
Oh yes, that was a good one. I remember being really into that. Yeah, I mean, of course, if you go with loose connections, these books would be like 10,000 pages long. So, but we've had some ideas to maybe do some shorter shows in the future. So yeah, I mean, watch this space, because we may get around to it, and that would be a prime one.
Yeah, and I think books about shows that lasted like one or two seasons and had a passionate following, and they stayed that way because they didn't get enough of the show to sort of sate that so they could move on safely and quietly. I think that's a niche that could be filled very easily. And
I totally agree. Like those shows are full of potential, right? It's like, oh, cool, I got to see how you started it, but then like they never finished it, so that's up to us. Like that means we can fill the gaps, and yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and I think your approach to wanting people to write about how they felt about the show or the episode, rather than doing an all-out review, is a little bit of genius, because you get to see a little bit of the magic behind the show, whatever it was that attracted the attention of all these people. Because these people are writers, these people watch TV, they watch movies, they have a passion for these genre shows, and you get to see a little bit of the magic that might have made this show great had it stuck around. And these people are hanging on to that. These people are just loving what could have been. And that's why I, for one, am eager to read the Babylon 5 book, because, full disclosure again, I was the co-host of a podcast about Babylon 5 that ran from 2006 to 2012 and had a 25th anniversary revival in 2019. So we
Oh,
did
wow.
over 300 shows, interviews, reviews, discussion on a series that was only on the air for five.
Yeah,
So.
that's amazing. I mean, Babylon 5 is such a passion of mine too. I was watching it at the time, and just, you just could not wait for the next episode. It's the only show where I ever watched last week's episode immediately before watching the new one.
Nice.
It was just, oh, it's such a cool show. And I feel like it was one of those shows where, because not everyone loved it, you kind of felt like you had to love it, or else it's going to die. So it's like, that becomes really even more important. And so kind of the role of like being a fan is very interactive in that sense, because you're like, I gotta hang on to this, I gotta spread the word, I gotta love it so hard. Whereas I feel like nowadays, you watch a Marvel movie or whatever, and it's like, yeah, they don't need me. Like, it's going to be fine on its own. Like, I'm not as important here, which is not to say those things aren't good, but it's a different flavor.
I get it. I totally get it. Because I thought Babylon 5 was pretty much as close to the perfect show as you could get. I mean, there's one episode, the episode Day of the Dead. Me and Tim, my co-host, 10 years we've been arguing about this one episode. So.
Right.
But Crusade. I wanted Crusade to succeed, and it didn't. And Crusade is one of maybe three different shows that I've ever ever written fan fiction for. I didn't,
Oh,
Babylon
wow.
5 didn't need me to write fan fiction. Crusade needed me. That's what I said.
Yeah, I think Babylon 5 is the only show where I actually contacted, a behind the scenes person to say thank you. I wrote to
Oh,
JMS, he wrote back to me, and I mean, he just wrote back thanks, and that's all he needed to. But I was like, oh my God, he even wrote back. Like, this is amazing. But I'd never seen the need particularly to reach out to somebody who made a show and thank them for what they were doing. I mean, this is the kind of fan passion that I absolutely adore. And I remember when somebody looked at the he looked at the table of contents for the first Outside In, and it was like a convention runner in Doctor Fandom, and he looked at this list and he said, "Wow, you have captured fandom here. Like, you have really captured fandom." And I was like, "Oh yeah, I guess I have, because that's really one of my passions. I really love people who are fans of things, because I find it really cool." And I think, growing up, like in the 80s, whatever, it was really embarrassing to be a fan of something. Like, you, and especially the 90s, like, you had to be playing it cool. And so, the idea that you were like into something, let alone, like a dead TV show, was like the absolute height of uncoolness. And then at some point it switched. And I remember going on a date in like, the early 2000s or whatever, and somebody said, like, "Oh, what are your passions?" And I was just used to hiding my passions. And I was like, oh, I guess she's asking. I guess I'll say it. And so I did. And she had no concept of like fan things at all. But she was just so excited that I had passions. I was like, oh, okay. Well, I have plenty of passions. Like, this is great. And so I thought, I think it's a new world. And it is. It's great now that you can really lean into your, fan nerdy passions. And it's not embarrassing anymore. You don't have to hide that on the train or whatever if you're reading a comic book or something.
Well, I am happy for the new Battlestar Galactica series because it meant I could fly my old Battlestar Galactica series fandom high and proudly. It's like, yes, I was a
Exactly. I was
Galactica
cool before it was
fan.
cool.
Yeah, I was a Galactica fan before I was a Star Wars fan. Go figure.
Amazing.
And so that, that leads to my next question. What, I mean, do you have plans for a whole lot more of these fandoms with either the shorter shows or some of the longer running ones?
Yes, we do. We're redoing classic Doctor Who, because the very first Outside In that we did, was it didn't look like what the others now look like. I was kind of figuring out what I was doing, and I got because I sort of had the idea of like, oh yeah, let's basically write a bunch of essays and take controversial opinions, and that's sometimes what people do. But actually, what a lot of the contributors did was they sent in really just wacky pieces, and so they like, they wrote the review as a recipe or as a musical, right? Or like, all kinds of weird things, like, there's technical manuals and there's all kinds of like things. And I was like, oh, I have not actually realized the extent to which my idea can actually be taken. So I was like, I credit myself with having a very good idea, but I really credit the contributors for just basically taking this and running with it. And so the subsequent books where I was like, oh right, I know how to do this now. I know what to get out of people. So the first one was kind of it's a weird anomaly. So we decided to redo it for the 10th anniversary of the Outside In series. But then we're going back to some more Star Trek, because we did like original Trek and then we did Next Generation, but we very much didn't want to be the Star Trek publisher, and we thought if we keep doing Star Trek, there's so much of it that we'll never end. So we switched over to Deep Space Nine next, and so I'm very excited for that one, because I think like there's cool things to say about Deep Space Nine, which is also one of my other favorites. And actually, I remember watching, Babylon 5 and Deep Space Nine around the same time, and at first you think, oh, these are kind of similar, and then you sort of realize they go their own way, and that's all cool. But yeah, there'll be Babylon 5 and Crusade. There's going to be Blake 7. There's a whole bunch of other ones down the pipe. Twin Peaks as well is actually probably the next one out.
Yeah, Blake 7 and what's the other one? Red Dwarf. Those have huge followings.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, it's fascinating to me trying to do something about old TV, but also trying to do it about current TV, and sometimes the two overlap. And I realized this when I was doing original Trek, because you're writing about very clunky kind of, like formative stuff from the 60s, and then you suddenly come into like the modern movies, which we threw in as well, and it becomes very up to date. And when we did classic Doctor Who, but then we did new Doctor Who, and the new Doctor Who one, it was like, well, how do I say something different about something that's just aired? Like, especially once you get up to the current season, and it became a real challenge. And I was sort of like, okay, I guess you're not really saying something different. You're saying something interesting. And so I sort of reformulated it that way a bit and be like, okay, let's say interesting things. But it was a bit hard to second guess, because like, I think one person who's normally really good at like inverting all the stereotypes, he sent me something and I was like, you know what? These are probably going to be the fundamental thoughts about this episode. So, you haven't got anything to play against. So it's very hard for you to kind of invert stuff. So yeah, it's interesting hitting shows that are kind of coming back, like we did with X-Files, and mostly it's now 20 odd years old, and then suddenly there's a revival, and we were doing the revival pretty much as is, as we're assembling that. So that was very interesting to do.
It sounds like Thunderbirds and Space 1999 are waiting for you in the wings.
I think they might be, yes.
Can you talk about some of the other books that ATB has been putting out? Because I know they've done a couple of biographies and just, I guess, the one of them was a tribute to the Living Dead, Night of the
Yes,
Living Dead.
so that's right. And so I'm only the outside in editor. It's interesting because so Arnold Blumberg does ATB, and for the zombie one, the Living Dead one, it was kind of an overview of like sort of the zombie genre, looking at how zombies have changed over the years and so on. But in my day job, I'm a mathematician who studies infectious diseases, and I once did a mathematical model of zombies. So Arnold asked me to write the foreword to that, and I was like, oh, I got to write the foreword. But I'll say that's my only real interaction. It's more as an external person for the non-outside in books, except for Bookworm, which I wrote with Anthony Milson from the UK. That was a guide to the Doctor Who New Adventures. So those were the novels of the 90s. And in the 1990s, there was almost no Doctor Who TV. There was one TV movie, but the books were very much keeping the flame alive. And those books are very hard to get now. And also, there's a lot to read because there were 61 books. So what we did was we read them so that you don't have to. And if you're interested in what happened in the 90s in Doctor Who, like, we're basically doing a series of that. So we did the Bookworm one, which was the New Adventures. We're working on the Eighth Doctor Adventures from sort of the very late 90s and then early 2000s. So it's a lot of reading to do because writing about 80,000 word books is much harder than writing about a TV show where you just watch it for 42 minutes. But those are interesting to do as well.
So what do you do to, read or watch in order to, I guess, refuel the fandom fires?
Yeah, I think with the Bookworm books, I kind of feel like I've kind of become like the book person. And I sort of realized too, I love reading books, and I've always loved Doctor Who spin-off books and things like that. And then they stopped doing them really as a thing. I mean, there's occasional ones now, but they sort of switched, fandom switched from books to toys. And I kind of feel a bit sad about this because I'm like, oh right, well that's sort of, I guess that's a comment on where we are in society a bit. So I decided that books were going to be my niche, and so I'm both kind of reading current ones and also rereading things. I run a website called the Cloister Library where we basically put in all the continuity of all the Doctor Who books ever, and so it took us 21 years to complete, but we did it. We did it like just a couple years ago, and so that was quite an amazing task. Then we did the Bookworm books, and I just feel like I just enjoy kind of like refueling in that way. So it's also interesting to reread them because, of course, I read them all, but 20 plus years ago, and then like reading them again now is quite fascinating because some have aged poorly, but some have aged very well. And so, you get real insights there. And it used to be like the thing everyone read. Like, you go to some local fan thing, and everyone's like, "Oh, the latest book, the latest book." And now it's like, "Wait, what? There were books in the 90s? Like, who knew?" And so, again, that's where I feel like that fandom needs me. Like, I can do real good here and kind of help keep the flame alive. And the latest episode on TV, it's like they don't need me for that. Like, I enjoy watching it, but like my, as you say, like keeping the fuel alive, like that's really kind of like where I fall in.
Awesome. So, other than ATB Publishing, where can people find you and your geek-centric writing or your mathematical model writing?
Yes. I write for various other publishers as well. So I've done a couple of Doctor Who guides for ECW Press. We did guides to the new series, and those did quite well. So we did Who is the Doctor? There's two volumes of that, and we did The Doctors Are In and Who's 50, which is the 50 Doctor Who stories to watch before you die. I just recently published a book called Look at the Size of That Thing, which is a comedy guide to Doctor Who. It's basically like, if you're a newbie to Doctor Who and you don't have time to read and watch everything, here's a guide. Oh, but by the way, we're making fun of everything. So that has gone down very well. People have said this is absolutely hilarious stuff. So I wrote that with Bill Evenson. I've also write some much more serious books for Obverse, which is a publisher in the UK, and they had this idea that you write like a whole book about one Doctor Who story. So I did that for Doctor Who and the Silurians. But then they branched out. Well, now they're doing one for Star Trek as well. They've just launched, but they did one sort of for other series. And so they, you know, kind of pick a series. And it kind of became like what you say, like, you know, these short-lived series, because someone did Dark Skies and they did little, you know, one-off shows that didn't last too long. I did Millennium, which is not that short-lived. It was a three-year-long series kind of made by Chris Carter, which mm-hmm. I also did in the X-Files volume. So I was kind of doing two Millennium books at once, which was very bizarre. And actually ran into two of the writers from Millennium at a Los Angeles convention. And I went up to them and was just sort of gushing and being like, oh my God, I love Millennium so much. And, oh yeah. And I said, I'm writing not one, but two books about it. And they're like, sorry, what? Like two books about Millennium? Like what? And I was like, yeah, no, really. And so, yeah, so that Millennium one will be out very soon. But that, you know, that's much more serious stuff because you're looking at all the fears of the 90s and all the, you know, you're writing about serial killers and guns in schools and, you know, pandemics and things. And so, you know, I'm sure the FBI has a file open on me.
Cool. Well, we will have links to all of that. And, are there any places to find you, like on social media, that you actually have time to spend with?
So that's actually, you make an excellent point. That's actually the one place where I do cut some corners because I'm not really on social media that much. And so, yeah, I would say like, I mean, you can certainly Google me and find my website, which has links to things. But yeah, I'm not a huge kind of like, I'm not on Twitter or anything. So yeah, I feel like. Like, I, you know, I had to give up cable in order to be a writer. I had to give up gaming in order to be a professor. I feel like I have to give up social media just to stay sane.
Awesome. Well, we will have links to those books and those publishers where we can find all the other geeky, fun stuff. But Stace, thank you so, so much for sharing your passion and your time with us today.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Slice of Sci-Fi. Escape Pod is your destination for the best in modern short science fiction. Our intrepid crew of editors and hosts will bring you fun, thought-provoking, in-flight entertainment every week as the pod careens around the multiverse. In the mood for a classic, we've got Anson Mount, also known as Captain Christopher Pike, reading Theodore Sturgeon. Want something a little more up-to-date? Jennifer R. Donahue's Surveillance Fatigue has you covered in every sense. From classic space opera to intimate character drama, from heroic alien pets waiting for their families, to herds of literal Einsteins and the benevolent conspiracy they're hatching. Escape Pod has it all at escapepod.org. So buckle up, because it's story time.
This is Kevin Murphy from Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Rift Tracks, and you have bitten off a nice big chunk of Slice of Sci-Fi.
And once again, you can head on over to atbpublishing.com and check out all the different books in the Outside In series. And you come on over to sliceofscifi.com. We'll have links to some of the other works that Stace has had a hand in. I've had a lot of fun writing for these obscure shows that were connected to the Chris Carter universe. I really, really wanted both Harsh Realm and Kolchak. Well, the new Kolchak was just called Night Stalker. I really wanted those to succeed. I was a fan of Frank Spotnitz's work, and I really had hoped that show would revive that mystique that I felt when I originally watched the original Kolchak the Night Stalker, but it was not to be, and we just have our imaginations to follow up with now. Anyway, I don't know when the Babylon 5 collection will be out. I'm guessing sometime in the first half of 2022. and there may be a few more books coming out from the Outside In series that I may be curious enough to ask to write for again. We'll see. But like I said, head on over. There's a lot of stuff over there to be appreciative of. And one of the Star Trek Next Generation collections has a supplemental free PDF you can download. I think it's 10 or 11 essays about Picard. And so you can head on over there and download that. You know, I think I'll just add a link to it directly so you can find it easier, because it is a little bit of a dig to get to. But what are your thoughts? What do you think of these collections of professional and semi-professional and fan writer works on the TV shows and fandoms that we obsess over? Let me know. Send me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com, or yes, you can call 602-635-6976 and leave a voicemail. I'm warming that up again, so we'll be able to take Babylon 5 related questions when the reboot hits the airwaves. Yes, I'm preparing that far ahead. You know how I feel about Babylon 5. You should have expected that. Or you can come by the website, sliceofscifi.com, and leave a comment in the show notes. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Player FM, and iHeartRadio. And if you're listening through Apple or Stitcher, please consider leaving us a review. Let folks know you are enjoying the show. And maybe it's a podcast they should give a listen to as well. Oh, and you can also leave ratings and reviews and comments over at Podchaser. You can also start up a conversation over on Twitter. I shouldn't spend as much time on Twitter as I do, but I do. I kind of enjoy the randomness, the conversations that pop up out of nowhere, the conversations that come back around 2 years later. I'm like, didn't we already talk that into the ground? Why are you bringing this up again? Anyway, Slice of Sci-Fi over at Twitter. You can start up a conversation over there, or just watch me comment on other people's tweets about music, about horror, about sci-fi, having fun. I'd like to thank everyone who is currently helping to support Slice of Sci-Fi and all the shows in the Slice of Sci-Fi universe, including Babylon Podcast and Writers After Dark and a few others. Those websites and podcasts are kept online with your help. And in case you hadn't noticed yet, we have a brand new, shiny, much faster web server for most of those sites. So Slice of Sci-Fi, Babylon Podcast, all of those should be faster. And that was done with your help. Everyone who was supporting through Patreon, supporting through PayPal, and hopefully adding coffee to the mix will increase the options people have to donate. ko-fi.com/sliceofscifi. Patreon.com/sliceofscifi, and the PayPal link for occasional donations is paypal.me/sci-fi-summer. And the people who are supporting through Patreon, as always, are eligible for Patreon perks. The books and DVDs and Blu-rays that I receive as review materials that I can't keep because there's too many of them are items I can gift to the supporters, the fans and friends of the show who help keep this show going. So just head on over to Patreon, pick a tier, and like I said, every month I pick an email address out of the hat, and that person can choose their perk for the month. And that's how I show my gratitude to the people who have been supporting this show and all the others. And some of these supporters go back a decade or more, and I am grateful and appreciative of that support. And that'll do it for this episode. Again, thank you all for listening. We will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. There's one more show before the end of the year, and I hope you'll enjoy it. It's a look back at some of the genre entertainment we here at Slice of Sci-Fi found compelling enough to recommend that you go check it out if you have not yet already done so. But again, we'll be back. Take care.